In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Thank you for joining us today on the iSpy Radio Show. On this Thanksgiving weekend, there is a lot to be thankful for, not least of which is that we don't have Hillary as our president-elect. Be thankful for that. Did you catch that article in the Drudge Report earlier this week about how Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, used a tremendous amount of data mining and social media analysis and lean startup business principles to win the election, basically throwing out the old model of campaigning, which is what Hillary was still using? We are in a new era. So many of the Never Trump people that I talked to earlier in the year thought that he would lose because the Never Trumpers looked at things through the old way of thinking. He didn't have a ground game. He wasn't spending on ads. Trust the polls. It's like when the telephone started taking off. People's mindsets were still wrapped around the telegraph and how things were done then. There was the telegraph and land stations and a host of messenger boys to relay messages. But why do that when you can talk directly to people? And before that, why rely on the post office and the Pony Express that takes days for a message to get there when you can get a message there in minutes over the telegraph? We stand at the edge of a new era, a new way how the government will operate and conduct its business and get out of the way to unleash the power of business. And that's exciting. And that brings me around to today's topic. Technology and security is the new field of business and the new battlefield. 200 years ago, whoever controlled the waterways controlled the world. In today's world, ISIS, China, Russia, you name it, they can all wipe out the equivalent of the Erie Canal in a matter of seconds and from thousands of miles away. They can steal customer information, take over bank accounts, they can shut down websites or millions of lanes of traffic, steal corporate secrets, or worse, steal our national security secrets. And now, in the middle of all of that, just a few weeks ago, Obama has handed over the controls of the internet, the 21st century waterways, to foreign countries. To talk about the handover of the internet and a whole host of other cybersecurity issues, especially with a new Trump administration, I'd like to welcome Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. He is an author and a consultant to Congress, the CIA, the FBI, and a whole host of other government agencies on matters of cybersecurity. Kevin, thanks for talking with us today.
Terrific to be here. Thank you.
And I actually like to start the show by reading a little bit from your most recent blog post, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. You say this: the media is going nuts over President-elect Trump and his transition. It seems as if nothing is going right for the elitists who like to tell us what to think. That's good news for America. It comes on the heels of what I believe was God's divine intervention for America with last week's election. We must give glory where it's due, and it belongs to God. And I would just say amen to that.
Well, thank you. Yes, and I read Psalm 107. A friend of mine said, read Psalm 107 the day after the election. And it's so pertinent because it talks about how we go the wrong direction, we mess up, we get in trouble, we cry out to God, God delivers us, and then it says, oh, that men would come back and give thanks. And so I purposed for the last 2 weeks to give thanks to God and praise his name every opportunity.
Well, and that's very appropriate for this being Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm right there with you. I really believe that America dodged a huge bullet. I'm just looking forward in terms of what Trump is trying to do with his administration. And if he gets just half of that done, that would be so tremendous. And then you compare that to what would have happened if Hillary gotten elected, and we would be looking instead at what would happen if she got half of her agenda done. A very different world. And, you know, during the election, the Russians, there was all these claims by the mainstream media that they were attacking our election, which is kind of laughable in itself, considering that Hillary was the one who opened the door to our government being hacked. Was there ever any actual evidence that Russia was involved with interfering with our elections?
Well, it depends on who you speak with. The vast majority of U.S. intelligence agencies did believe that there were Russian ties, Russian hackers that are associated with the government. The FBI was standalone, not going along with that. They weren't sure. And Reuters did a review and they weren't so sure. So I don't think we know with certainty that it was tied to the Russian government. But we do know this. That's a part of unrestricted warfare. It was outlined by the Chinese. That's been adopted by the Russians, that you want to expose an enemy country's leaders on the internet to embarrass them.
Hmm.
So we do know that is a legitimate tactic of unrestricted warfare.
Hmm. Well, in terms of WikiLeaks, I know that that was another accusation that Russia was the one that had hacked into the DNC servers and whatnot. What are your thoughts on that? Was Russia behind the behind those? And as far as WikiLeaks is concerned, are they a criminal or a patriot?
Well, that's a little harder. They were absolutely considered by the media to be patriots when WikiLeaks was exposing Abu Ghraib and the Bush administration.
Yes.
But now they're villains of the worst possible kind. They were exposing national security secrets from the military earlier, and that was good, and exposing criminal corrupt behavior by our politicians is somehow bad. They're in between. They are what they are, and I don't know if they were tied to the Russians or not. It's equally likely that a DNC staffer released the information. That's what has been claimed, and I believe that that's equally likely to Russian hacking.
Yeah. After, well, in terms of getting their information, I actually saw it was a little report by Judge Napolitano, and he was alleging that it wasn't the Russians, it was actually probably more likely the NSA and a leaker from there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's no doubt the NSA would have the capability of it, and if there was someone in the intelligence field that wanted to do something political, they could. It wouldn't be the first time, and it really isn't one of the dangers of the security state that we have, is that people who have that knowledge and information can control and dictate the future of our country, and that's wrong. That to me is far worse than having Russia hacked, because we can defend against Russia, but the NSA's access is a much higher level, much more direct, and that's a little frightening.
It is a little frightening. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming back, I want to talk a little bit more about Russia, and then also we're going to talk about the effect of Obama turning over the internet. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Kevin Freeman. He is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, and he is also founder of GlobalEconomicWarfare.com. He is one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. You know, we're talking about the Russians in the last segment there, and what was kind of amazing, really, was while our election was going on, the mainstream media seemed to completely ignore that Russia was actually on heightened alert. And the Russian papers were essentially saying we were on the cusp of World War III, Russia's military was prepping for war, and Russians abroad were told to bring their families home. Somehow the media missed all of that. What was causing Russia's angst during all of that?
Well, perhaps we should say that the media caused all of that. The media, collaborating with the Obama administration and the Clinton campaign, were making direct claims and threats that Russia had interfered in our election, which would be an act of war. They were making direct claims that they were hacking and doing nefarious things, and that created a heightened tension. And certainly the Clinton claims against Vladimir Putin and the efforts that have taken place in the Middle East have all pointed us to an adversarial position, and President-elect Trump was saying we need to find a way to work. We don't want to go towards World War III. Even Jill Stein of the Green Party was saying, I would prefer Trump to Clinton because Clinton will get us into a war.
Yeah, wasn't that something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's move on a little bit now to an issue that happened a few weeks ago where the U.S. had handed over control of the internet. Why is that so important?
Well, technically, we have had control of the internet from day one. In the Commerce Department, there was a contract that we had given to the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers, ICANN, I-C-A-N-N. And what we did was we released the contract, we let it expire, and we did nothing to maintain control. ICANN is now an independent organization with a diverse board of directors from various countries. But what is lost in all of that, the message was, oh, this is no big deal, we're just letting it go to be ruled by an international body. What's lost in all of that is he who controls ICANN controls when you type in a word on your computer, does it go to the right website or does it go to a false website? Hmm. And the assigning the names and the numbers connection, no longer responding or under the authority of the United States government, opens up the possibility that Russia and China and others have said, we've got to find a way to get in and dominate this board. And they were very quiet before the transfer, but there you could pick up here or there a few mentions in the media or on the internet where they were salivating at the idea that this would no longer be under American control. We just, in other words, handed over one of the great defenses that we have for internet cybersecurity, as well as one of the offensive weapons that we had by controlling that board.
Well, how was that an offensive weapon?
Well, we could do to them what we fear they will now do to us.
I see.
We could cut off access to between Foreigner and the website, because unless they typed in the long string of numbers, they wouldn't get to the right website and they wouldn't be matched up. So we could send the PLA in searches. We could misdirect them to false websites or do it. It is a very powerful thing, a very valuable thing, and we decided that there would no longer be American control.
Well, why do you suspect that the Obama administration was for that? Because, I mean, you would think that, you know, just looking at that at the surface value of it, it certainly would seem that you would never want to give that up.
And why would you give it up in between, right before an election, in a lame duck era of the president's term? Why would you do it then as opposed to make it a campaign issue and let the American people decide? We gave up something of enormous economic value, political value, and maybe national security value, and we did it in the heat of a campaign where there was virtually no attention paid to it.
Mm. So it sounds then, you know, a lot of the people that were trying to raise the alarms about this, it sounds to me, from what you're saying, is they were absolutely right. This sounds like Iran or China would be effectively able to shut down what they would consider offensive sites, whether it's anti-Muslim sites or even a political view that they don't like.
Well, that's something that could be done in their own country, and they can do that pretty much now. But what happens if the board of ICANN gets populated with interests, for example, from Islamic states that are constantly pushing to censure Israel, punish Israel, or do something to Israel in the United Nations, and they were in a position to do that? There is no Security Council override like we have in the United Nations to where we can protect Israel against a joint Islamic State vendetta against them. Right now, if a lot of voting members of the United Nations line up with Islamic interests, and they would vote problems for Israel repeatedly, but we have a veto in the Security Council. We don't have a veto with ICANN.
Well, Obama had announced 2 years ago that he was going to do this, but the Congress did nothing. Was there anything that they could have done?
Oh, absolutely. Senator Cruz had a bill that the Congress could have passed and at least forced the president to veto it and then override it. They could have kept control. This is, in larger sense, for a longer period, economically, this is a bigger deal than giving away the Panama Canal. Hmm. And yet it was done without any real discussion or debate among the American people.
Wow. Well, I guess all of this begs the question is, can we get it back now?
There are certainly ways that we can regain control. We invented the internet and we populated it around the world. There are certainly ways that we could regain control, but none of them are easy and none of them are straightforward.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, that's a good place to take a break. Everyone stay with us. Lots more with Kevin Freeman, a cybersecurity expert. Coming up, we'll be talking about military cybersecurity. His website, if you'd like to go visit, is globaleconomicwarfare.com. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking about cybersecurity today, and we're talking with Kevin Freeman. He is one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. He is a consultant to many federal, state, and local agencies. He is also the author of Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his newest book is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. You can check both of those out on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for today's show page, which is 649. And Kevin, we've talked about cyber warfare with you in the past on past I Spy radio shows here regarding financial and government hacks and manipulations. But let's look at this really from a military standpoint. In terms of ISIS, what are they trying to do to us, and what are we trying to do to them?
Well, it depends on the area that you're talking, but one of the things that they're trying to do, according to the FBI, is every day they're trying to hack into our power grid with dozens of attempts daily. And they have not yet been successful, but they keep trying. Just imagine if they had the ability to hack into our power grid and shut it down. If you want to read a scary book, you can read One Second After, which talks about what happens when an EMP shuts down the power grid.
Yes.
Or you can read Ted Koppel, who wrote the book Lights Out, about a cyber attack and how vulnerable we are. That's why ISIS every day is trying to conduct economic warfare against us, in addition to terrorizing the Middle East, in addition to encouraging terror activities in Europe and the United States. Every day they're looking for ways to destroy us.
Well, an EMP attack is very different from a software attack. I mean, what would happen if say, they did get in, and how quickly could we recover from that? Is that simply just a matter of, you know, reinstalling the operating software, or what would happen?
Well, if you had control of the computer systems that are operating the grid, you could cause the grid to go into catastrophic failure from which you could not recover. They could overheat or overload. They could burn out transformers, large-scale substations, and make it impossible. It'd be the same effect as an EMP. If you know what you're doing, you could literally take down the electric grid, and it could be dark for a year.
How sophisticated are their attacks? I mean, are they getting closer to doing something like that?
I know that they have access, they have money, and if you have money, you can have the most sophisticated attack. You can buy the toolkits from the Russians, you can buy, hire the best hackers. So with money, they have access to great capabilities. China already has capabilities. There was a rumor that when the power grid went down in San Diego not long ago, and it was down for a few hours, there was rumor that it was suspected to have been a China, hey, look what we can accomplish and do anytime we want to notice. So it is very frightening. You can hire people, and ISIS has that capability, and ISIS has some brilliant hackers.
Well, in terms of our ability to fight them, what are we trying to do to, you know, go after them?
Well, President-elect Trump has a secret strategy to combat ISIS. I'm not sure what it is, but I know he's got Lieutenant General Flynn that he's named as his future national security advisor. And I recently read General Flynn's book, The Field of Fight. I know General Flynn. I was called in by him to speak to the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I believe that we will have a direct fight taken straight to ISIS, and I believe we'll prove victorious as a result of it. They will alter the rules of engagement as necessary to win the fight, and we will ally where possible with Russia in defeating ISIS.
Well, and I imagine that we won't be dropping leaflets saying we're going to attack you in 6 hours either. So
that doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, it certainly does not. In terms of our own military readiness, how prepared are we to fight off some of these attacks against us?
Well, you know, I was on a panel over the weekend in Washington. We were speaking to a group of leaders, many of whom were Trump transition team members. And one of the other panelists, the moderator was Lieutenant General Boykin, and the other panelist was Major General Robert Dees, who was associated with the Ben Carson campaign, is a brilliant, brilliant man, brilliant general. And he was sharing about the military readiness and how depleted we are. And he got into the usual statistics, you know, we haven't had this few ships since this date, or troop sizes the smallest since this date, and so forth. But equally important was the morale and readiness and the officers that have been politicized. So unfortunately, the military is still the best Fortunately, it's still the best in the world. Unfortunately, it's degraded dramatically from a morale standpoint and from a budget size standpoint. So we are not where we need to be, and I believe President-elect Trump has plans to reverse that quickly.
Well, and I've seen some reports that the Cyber Mission Force, I can't remember who was floating this, but they thought it was going to be about 4,300 people, but only about 1,600 of those would be on a combat mission team. But within that, they were talking about taking an offensive hacking role. That's something that, you know, when you hear hacking, you usually think of that as the bad guys doing. What would we be doing when it comes to offensive hacking?
Well, there's a couple of things. First off, both from a military standpoint, and there's a debate right now underway between whether or not we, the head of Cyber Command, should be identical to the director of the NSA. And there's a debate, and I'm not sure how that's going to land. But we have a fully prepared Cyber Command. We find it hard to staff because they're subject to the same military requirements in a lot of cases, and so it's really hard to find elite hackers that want to go and work at Cyber Command. But we have some phenomenal individuals that do that, and we have the capability to take down their power systems. We have the capability to disrupt their telecommunications, to insert false information, to hack and expose leaders on the internet. We have those very similar capabilities. We're also talking about the possibility of a cyber castle doctrine, where private companies that get hacked have the ability to retaliate and hack back in response or retaliation. And this is a long and storied history that goes back to the Constitution, where it talks about letters of marque and reprisal could be issued by Congress, where you could grant basically piracy capabilities to private enterprise to take back things that were stolen.
Wow. Wow, fascinating stuff. Okay, we are due for a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have lots more with Kevin Freeman talking about cybersecurity. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking to Kevin Freeman, talking about cybersecurity. And he is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and also founder of GlobalEconomicWarfare.com. If you'd like to go visit that, some really great blog posts up there about cybersecurity and also some broader issues as well. And, you know, we were talking about in the last segment there the readiness of our own military. You know, you see these spy movies and whatnot, and 24 was another great show that used this a lot. And how much can, like, cybersecurity do in terms of, like, taking out hard assets? For example, there was a recent 24, it was actually a couple years ago now, but where they were hacking into the drone software and taking control of these drones. Is that a possibility that some of the, you know, like ISIS could gain control over our own drones?
Oh, certainly. We've had drones that have been that have fallen in the Middle East where we've been operating. They got hacked. They got landed, and the technology was stolen. Hmm. So absolutely, there's nothing that's impenetrable. But they could be used against us. And when we talk artificial intelligence, and the Pentagon is researching. Robot soldiers that have capabilities. It's a very scary world, especially when you have a hacker that can take control of things. But you don't have to take control of a drone to cause serious problems. The Stuxnet virus caused the centrifuges to overspin, and the net result is you destroyed a nuclear program. So there's a lot of things that you can do if you can take. You could shut down systems. You could cause people to get the wrong dosage of medicines. There was even a worry with Dick Cheney had a left ventricle assist device that was a heart pump that was put in his chest that had a internet-based component to it, and there was worry that it might get hacked and you would over-regulate the heart and cause the heart to pump too fast and could kill him. Mm-hmm. So we are a very internet-dependent society. You can change a lot of things. You can take control of cars. It's been proven that you could cause cars to crash and all sorts of things with hacking. So it's a really dangerous world.
Well, and that has certainly been one of my concerns as you look at these driverless cars coming forward. And I know Google is a big one pushing this, but a number of other ones. I mean, imagine driving down the highway at 65, 70, 80 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you have no control.
No, but when you look back historically and you read about how General Patton died, and some people think that it was a setup, you know, either payback from the war or political opponents or whatever, and you see his death in a car accident, you realize that in the automobiles in which we operate today, it doesn't even have to be a driverless car. You can hack a car and take control of the brakes, and whether the brakes, you can run the accelerator. People have hacked the entertainment systems of an airplane and demonstrated that you can get into that and take control of the airplane.
Wow. Wow. That is astonishing. Let's shift gears a little bit here. There's been a lot of interaction between the government and some of these private security firms. And I think it was a couple of months ago now, there was a news story out that another contractor working for the NSA was arrested for taking classified information out of the workplace. What is going on between these private security firms and the government? I mean, it seems like they need to, especially in the wake of Edward Snowden, that they would have tightened up some of these relationships with these contractors. What are some of the improvements that you're hoping to see in the Trump administration for something like that?
Well, one of them, and something that a lot of people pointed out, a few years ago, IBM made the ThinkPad computer, and I carried an IBM ThinkPad for many years. And then that computer was sold to Lenovo, which is a Chinese corporation. But people, Americans, continued to buy the Chinese-produced ThinkPads, including in the Pentagon. And there was malware that was found in those ThinkPads that put our nation and our nation's security at risk. Kaspersky Labs is a big Russian company, and Kaspersky Labs has so far been among the very best at finding viruses and other problems that take place. I'm hopeful that corporation does not fall under government control at any point, because I think they're very good at catching software glitches, problems, hacking viruses, and so forth. They're one of the world's best. But then you pause and wonder, could we put our nation's security in a company that's based in Moscow?
Yeah.
So it's frightening. Then you go to the issue you raised, which is American companies with American contractors that can be compromised or could be sloppy or whatever else. We have to have the highest level of diligence across the board. We cannot take foreign-made, you know, the Android phones that are sending back text messages on usage, or security cameras that people install in their homes that were used and combined together for denial of service attacks, and they were the entry point to create computers to just go overload websites and do a DDoS attack.
Well, and getting back to Kaspersky there, if they're good at finding the malware, does that mean they would also be very good at planting malware?
Well, I've seen no evidence that they do that. But theoretically, it would be possible. I mean, this is the nightmare scenario, that you put all your trust in one cyber defense company, and that cyber defense company is malicious and does something terrible with it. That would be the nightmare, because they're your protection, and they essentially unlock everything and take down the economy.
Well, so are all of our government computers being run or being safeguarded by private industry, or have we taken that in-house and the government has its own designers for that sort of thing?
I believe it's mostly private industry. I'm certain, not aware, but certain that there may be some proprietary things that we have, but it's all done outside contracted.
Wow. Scary world in many ways. Right. Everyone stay with us. Lots more with Kevin Freeman. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Kevin Freeman. He is a consultant to many federal, state, and local agencies. He is also the author of Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And his latest book is Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. And, you know, just to touch real briefly on that last book there, Just real quick, what are some of the tips that people can be doing to protect themselves against these kind of cyber attacks?
Well, for one thing, you need to be certain that you use good passwords, that you use proper cyber hygiene, that you do the sorts of things that because 80% of hacks take place for a failure of doing cyber hygiene, clicking on a wrong link or something. And the perfect example, people ask, how did John Podesta get his emails hacked? His password was password, P, the @ SSW, the O was replaced by a 0, RD. So it's a very simple, easy-to-hack password.
These are the smart people in charge of our country. In terms of Hillary, Trump announced earlier this week that he may not be pursuing her in terms of any kind of cyber issues, I guess leaving the door open to maybe going after her in terms of the foundation. I think he's kind of being coy about that, quite frankly, because he doesn't want to tip off Obama that maybe, who may end up pardoning her. But what are your thoughts on that? Should he go after her for what she did?
I think what he ought to do is he ought to unleash the FBI and let them actually look in every nook and cranny as they wanted to, as apparently they've been halted in doing. The New York Police Department apparently had a look at Anthony Weiner's computer, and there was a lot more there that caused Comey to short-term reopen and then later close the investigation. So I think he ought to let the system do its job and say, we will not protect. Everybody's equal under the law.
Well, and that's where I would approach that from. Rush Limbaugh was talking about that as well and saying, well, look, if you go after her, then the liberals are going to go after every single Republican they can. And, to me, that's kind of a bad argument, because what's stopping them now? I mean, there's no reason why they wouldn't do that. Do you have any kind of suspicions what exactly was going on there with Hillary and her email? I mean, in terms of what the FBI was trying to find?
Well, my suspicion is, first off, that the reason she set the server up was because she wanted to be able to do all of this Clinton Foundation activity.
Yes.
And she wanted to declare it personal.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Yeah.
And that looks pay for play, and it needs to be investigated. You should not, the Secretary of State should not be receiving money in a foundation that pays her daughter and her husband and her friends for areas where the United States has interests, and if so, government,
and to the tune of billions of dollars. I mean, it's not just these small little contracts. We're talking billions of dollars been going through there,
and hundreds of thousands of dollars per speech and everything. That's really messy, and she was hiding that from the American people, so she set it up as a separate server. Then she deleted the emails. That's criminal activity. She should not be. It is not right for her to determine, well, that's just personal. It's not right for her to hand it to a to her lawyers to determine which is personal, which is not personal. It would have been proper, perhaps, to hand it over to the State Department and let the State Department separate personal from business, but not her lawyers. And she should not have deleted. And she should not have deleted when under investigation and all of that. All of that's messy and dirty. Now, going beyond that, what she was doing with activity on the Anthony Weiner laptop, I have no idea. But apparently it was sufficient enough for the New York Police Department to raise concern and threaten to expose if the FBI did not take a look. And when they took a look, Comey was very careful in saying it did not change his opinion on the one matter that was previously investigated that he'd commented on, which is whether or not her email use on a private server rose to the level of being able to be criminally prosecuted. And he said no. And a lot of career prosecutors argue with him on that, but he said no. But that's the only comment he made on the Weiner laptop. There may be all sorts of other criminal activity on that laptop that would implicate either Huma Abedin or Hillary Clinton.
Well, and it was very suspicious when that all happened in terms of the amount of emails there. There was reports that there were 650,000 emails. That, to me, sounds like it was somebody's lifesaver, that they were keeping evidence there just in case something would happen to them. What are your thoughts on that?
I would tend to agree with that. We know that the former congressman was involved in some things that were very seamy, and he's no longer congressman, didn't win mayor of New York. So it seems like he would keep things. He was in the middle of divorce discussions with his wife. I think it's entirely possible that there was dirt that was retained on purpose to protect himself.
Hmm. You know, earlier I had asked you about whether or not the NSA had the capability of getting hold of Hillary's emails. Do you think maybe they do, in fact, have all of Hillary's emails stored away? And do you think maybe, it was, I was asking earlier about the potential that they were the ones leaking things. Do you think maybe they know something about Hillary that the FBI does not?
I think they know something about every government official that the FBI does not, including the former Secretary of State.
You know, let's go ahead and take a break there because I want to talk to you about the future here and what you're expecting out of the Trump administration. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Kevin Freeman, who met with the Trump transition team. And welcome back. This is the final segment now with Kevin Freeman. He's one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare, financial terrorism, and cybersecurity. And he's got a couple of books out there that we'll make sure that we link up on iSpyRadio.com. Just head to show 649. We've been talking a lot about different issues here around cybersecurity. One of the actors in this, of course, is China. And I think this is, they're concerning on a number of levels. One, I find it very interesting that they're snapping up Hollywood production companies, which gives them a propaganda machine. But they're also starting to try to buy up Silicon Valley and other technology. Do you think the Trump administration gets it on these issues and their long-term strategic importance?
I believe so. But the Trump administration is not formed yet. We know that Congressman Pompeo, we know Jeff Sessions, Senator Sessions, and we know Lieutenant General Flynn are all at senior advice level positions, CIA director, attorney general, and national security advisor. I believe that those three definitely do understand the risks that China poses. I've, in fact, had the opportunity to be on a panel at CPAC speaking with Congressman Pompeo, and I have retained a good working relationship with Lieutenant General Flynn. And so I think they get it. I think you're right. It's very frightening that Hollywood is being bought up, and we know that the owners influence the movies and the content. We know that.
Yes.
That's just
yes.
Historically true. And we know that movies are censored highly in China if they're critical of the Chinese government in any way, that they're censored. They're not allowed in. So the idea that, oh, this is nothing other than economic investment is ludicrous. It is just not factual. This is a purpose. It's based on unrestricted warfare written by two senior colonels of the People's Liberation Army in 1999. One of the authors of that book is now the head of the PLA University, their military university in China. It is and very highly placed. So we know that that's a part of a grand strategy. It's a warfare strategy.
Hmm. Yeah. In terms of putting together his transition team, I find it interesting that the ones that he's settled on first really are centered around security. But from your own blog post, you mentioned that you were heading to D.C. tomorrow. I'm guessing that was about a week ago. And I am privileged to be there to advise a group of powerful conservatives on what the Trump team needs to do in the first 100 days. Well, what were your impressions from that meeting?
Well, I was given the opportunity. I had a 15-minute talk. These are some of the most important conservatives from all national security, free market economics, and Christian, Judeo, Western civilization values. So it's social, the political, the economic, and national security. And my piece was national security, and my number one thing that we need to do in the first 100 days is reintegrate economic warfare as a part of the national security discussion. What happens in the economy has a direct impact on our nation's security, and it must be treated as a matter of national security. And that's something that we used to do, but we stopped doing during the Clinton administration. It's time to reintegrate.
Well, and what types of steps are you referring to?
Well, economic warfare is a part of our enemy's doctrine. Taking down the stock market through cyber or other means. is a part of the enemy's warfare doctrine. In fact, it was a direct threat from Russia in 2014. If you mess with us too much with sanctions or anything like that, we'll just crash your stock market. The problem is the people that run the stock exchanges, when I went in and talked to the Inspector General at the SEC, they had no thought that this would be an issue of national security. It was always a thought of, well, people might try and manipulate the stock market to make money. What if they want to manipulate the stock market to ruin the American economy and destroy our defenses?
And when you talked to them, did you see any light bulbs going off, or would they just sit there and stare at you?
No, the light bulbs went off. We should have been doing this all along. A lot of the people that were in the room came from the Reagan administration, and they understood that the way we beat the evil empire of the USSR was specifically using economic warfare techniques.
Well, you know, and this is what I find so encouraging about the Trump administration. He really is surrounding himself with good quality people who have a deep understanding and an understanding outside of just their own little sphere of influence, but understand how that has ramifications in other spheres as well. So what are some of your other top, some of their other top issues that are basically on your wish list for Trump to fix, especially in terms of cybersecurity?
Well, in cybersecurity, one of the things is to integrate the public and the private response. When Sony Pictures gets hacked, what kind of response do we have? Does Sony have the ability to respond back? Do we need to have, it's a castle doctrine. You know, I live in Texas. Somebody breaks into my home and starts attacking me. I have the right to defend myself in my own home. Does a company have the right to defend itself? You know, it gets into all sorts of legal concerns. I had a friend who was the head of cybersecurity for a Fortune 500 company, and he had a supplier, the large accounting firm, that came in, and they like to plug into the systems to get the accounting information. Well, they have set up separate systems for them to plug into, and when they did that, the alarm bells and whistles went off. They had malware that they were bringing into this large company. And they were able to root it out, correct it, and so forth. But then it goes back to this large company and the accounting firm. Would they disclose where they got the virus from because of client confidentiality and so forth? We have a whole legal framework that needs to be built and understanding around that. That's something that the Trump administration needs to do early on, the ability to protect and defend our own property.
From your blog post, you mentioned a couple of other issues that you would like him to address. Earlier, we talked about the electric grid. What are some things that we can be doing in terms of protecting that?
Well, if there's going to be a big infrastructure bill, and I suspect that that's on Mr. Trump's plans, we ought to include protecting our grid as a big part of it. And what you can do there are there are hardware solutions that can be installed at critical points of the grid, and it can be required of the utilities to incorporate these. We need to do that. We could be building large-scale transformers. The use and need for electricity is going to grow in coming years around the world, yet we don't produce any of the large-scale transformers in the United States. It's not an industry we currently have. So there are a number of opportunities economically to protect our electric grid that can be a part of an infrastructure package and bring American jobs.
Well, and I think that is definitely necessary, especially too as we look at the possibility of an EMP. I mean, we are certainly due for upgrades on a number of those areas. Kevin Freeman, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, one of the things that kept rolling around in my head as Kevin was talking there was what an incredibly difficult job cybersecurity is. Technology is, of course, created by flawed human beings, and so there could be any number of mistakes in a piece of software that can be exploited. But even more than that, you have to strategize for technologies that haven't even been invented yet. It could be a very scary world out there, but only if you don't have the right leaders. And thankfully, we do. We have a possibility to make history. As I said last week, I believe that under President Trump, we will see a Reagan-like renaissance, an incredible time of growth and prosperity. Already, we've seen huge Black Friday sales, record-breaking highs on the Dow Jones this week, and there is more to come. And he hasn't even gotten started yet. Do be sure to check our website, click on our advertisers, that does help us out a bit, And we'll have some links up there that can help you be prepared just in case something happens. And be sure to share those with your Facebook friends and your Twitter friends, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.